Blessed Master,
dearest Mother,
saints and sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Remove all obstacles from my path.
Lift me into the mountain of thy consciousness.
Purify this body, mind, and spirit.
So that the universal vision
may be clear
before my inner and my outer vision. Has me feeling as such a child, it's hard to remember I have anything to do here. Reading from the Vision magazine, article by Papa Ram Dass, Attunement with God. Attunement with the eternal reality is attainment of God. Attunement with the eternal reality is attainment of God. The bound soul is on one side and the free and all-pervading spirit is on the other. The progress of the soul towards the supreme goal can be possible only as it gradually liberates itself from a state of discord and confusion. Its restless nature must be replaced by a rapture of peace and calmness. God stands for harmony and peace, while the soul is the very embodiment of the unregulated emotion groping in darkness and delusion. Before the great purpose to be achieved by the soul could dawn upon it, it must invariably receive a divine touch from outside. This touch comes from saints who have, by prolonged communion with God, transformed themselves into His very image. The aspiration which thereafter seizes the soul leads it onward with unfaltering steps in an ever-burning zeal to realize the highest glory of its existence, its divine and immortal nature. Now, the question naturally arises as to how the restless soul can harmonize itself with an eternal God of equilibrium, peace, and joy. The musical instrument, if it could be of any use to the musician, should be tuned to the needed note of the voice belonging to the singer. Similarly, the unstrung and unregulated chords of the soul have to be readjusted so that this human instrument may be made to synchronize with the immortal symphony of the Supreme Godhead. There is no easier method by which a soul can experience the ecstasy of the divine than through music, a music which thrills with the sweetest sounds, the name of God. The melody of the name sends such a delight through the soul and the entire physical frame that all the discord and turmoil within them immediately cease and the soul is elevated to meet and to mingle with the divine life and bliss. Sing on the Lord's most charming name. Sing on the infinite glories of the great beloved until, like a drop in the ocean, your life, seemingly cut off from God, merges in Him and tastes the bliss and immortal peace. There are innumerable instances of great devotees of God who employed this sovereign means for dwelling in the infinite God. When they were inebriated with the divine music, they could not sit or stand still. They danced in ecstasy like happy children. The outstanding figures of Chaitanya, Tukaram, Ramakrishna, and so many others illustrate the truth of this path of supreme devotion. To rise above the body idea, to dissolve the ego sense, to fill the soul with the transcendent peace and joy, to reach a state of the highest beatitude, replete with the light, knowledge, and delight of God, in short, to free the soul from the fetters of bondage and ignorance, you cannot find a more efficacious, more simple, and natural means. Natural sadhana than to sing the powerful name of the Lord in the company of saints and devotees. Ever victory to the name of the Lord. Whatever path we adopt in this world, all leads us to the same goal. It is a fascinating thing to read the experiences of saints and sages and realized masters all around this world, whatever culture, whatever clime they might be in. They may clothe it with different words because the language is shaped by the mind. And therefore, it's going to take on the tenor and the texture of the mind and the environment that that individual lives in. But when you look beneath the words to the real experience being described, it is the same. It is the same God experience in every great spiritual master, whether they be Muslim, Sufi, or whether they be Hindu, yogi, or whether they be Christian or of any other stripe. This is a wonderful, wonderful thing to begin to comprehend because it is liberating to us. One of the things that we have the great advantage of is having a spiritual lineage of masters whose personalities are quite different. Every one unique, strong, powerful. And yet, each one is inebriated and filled with God. This means that it doesn't matter what language you speak. It doesn't matter what country you were raised in. All that matters is that you dedicate yourself to this one supreme goal. And when you do, you begin to have certain hallmarks if you are sincere and steady in your practice. You begin to feel this greater peace in your soul. You begin to sense that there's something greater inside of you than just your human personality, just your mind, just the things that normally would preoccupy your day. It dawns on you that there is a supreme consciousness that resides within you. And then you get into the serious work of uncovering that supreme consciousness, which you realize has always been there, will always be there. However, we are just simply not conscious of it, not aware of it. If you've ever seen any of those drawings where there's faces and different images in the rocks and in the trees, and at first you don't see it because they're very cleverly hidden in there. But once you see that face hiding in the rocks, then you cannot not see it. And so it is with God. Once you begin to comprehend that it is God who is hiding within this supreme creation, in every rock, every tree, every person, suddenly you see the image of the divine, and once you see it, you cannot not see it. It's a wonderful thing. It begins to pick you up. You begin to feel the bliss and the joy and the peace within your own being. It transforms you. It fills you with that bliss. Now your consciousness is being lifted up through the spine. You're in the ajna, the point between the eyebrows, and you feel there perhaps a great pressure or a heat in the beginning. You see there certain lights as it begins to expand and open into higher realms. This is the gateway. This is the doorway into your heavenly kingdom. It is here that you meet your Lord. And then you bow and surrender everything at the feet of God. And as you do so, God picks you up. He's been waiting. He's been anxious to be able to do so. Only we've been so busy being at the controls, He will not interfere with our free will. And so He lets us go on our way. But you begin to turn the controls over to Him. You begin to surrender to God. And the more you surrender, the more He's able to take control of your life. Now you fight this and resist it on one hand and crave it with another. And so the duality of these two forces continue to go back and forth. in the Cross and Lotus Journal from this last one, Mother has such a wonderful talk, and a large portion of it comes from a letter that she wrote to a devotee at the time. And she writes here, "I want to put my own experience into words." And then there's this beautiful poem prayer that she wrote. "As I knelt down to say a prayer, I felt my Heavenly Father there. His whispered bliss crept in my thoughts and made me know 'twas Him I sought. He poured His love into my heart until I felt myself a part of every living thing in space and knew I'd met God face to face." Then she continues, "Until the ego is destroyed, we live in a world of duality pulled hither and yon, like a marionette on a string, battered about by the twin forces of good and evil, two thieves on our own cross, which is the body. Like a marionette on a string, battered about by twin forces of good and evil, the two thieves on our own cross, which is the body. It is because our minds are constantly absorbed by thoughts of good and evil that we are unable to fix our attention upon the one beloved who is above and beyond them both." And remember that most instructive story from the Garden of Eden, that Adam and Eve were instructed, Adam representing reason, Eve representing feeling. They were instructed not to eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. That is duality. When you are absorbed in God consciousness, it is not that you don't see the reality of this world. You do. You are aware of everything that's going on in this world. But you are also aware of the supreme reality that exists beyond this world, that is supreme and is the first cause of all of this world. And because of that, you do not become absorbed into the good and evil, the high and the low, all of the polar opposites that we are exposed to through this world and its interaction with the human mind. So when we delved into that knowledge, we bit into that fruit of knowledge of good and evil, we separated ourselves from God. We became blind to that one supreme consciousness, intelligence, power, that is the sole creator, sustainer, and destroyer of all of this cosmos. As a result of that, we fell into a state of ignorance. And we have wandered long and through a hard path in order to finally recover what it is that we had from the very beginning. But when we don't have it, we really miss it. And we begin to invest in this world as we wander out into this world, and we begin to think this world should contain that supreme reality through the senses, through the accomplishments of this ego, through material things that I'm able to gain, through a certain position that I can get in this world. And we invest this world with the power of that supreme God to grant our wishes for peace, for bliss, for all the things that we have in spirit. Now, of course, this is just not possible. The world doesn't have it to give. And yet we continue to seek after it. One thing after another disappoints us. And we just think, if I just get around the next corner, that happiness will be there. If I get my life just perfectly arranged, if everybody behaved, if everything was prosperous and everybody got along with each other, then everything would be perfect and I'd finally find that peace. And we keep on trying to rearrange the chess pieces on the board. But the next thing we know, the chess pieces move around, even if we get them pretty nicely arranged. Suddenly, everything's taken away from us. And ultimately, with death, everything is taken away from us. And so we finally come to the conclusion this world will not be that wish-fulfilling tree that I can pluck some fruit from it and I will have lasting happiness. Because that is the one thing that binds us all together. Everybody is looking for lasting happiness, but very, very few find it. It is only when we decide to release our grip on this world and our demand that it satisfy our need for ananda, for bliss, that we finally turn our mind to God and to God alone. You know, God had wrote something through me the other day that I thought was wonderful. And he said, whatever you fill your mind up with, that you become. Whatever you fill your mind up with, that you become. Think of your day-to-day living. What do you fill your mind up with? Do you chant God's name? Do you feel his bliss? Are you constantly in love with him? Are you constantly attuning yourself to him? Or are you attuning yourself to this world only? And then just giving a scant bit of attention, a little few minutes in the morning and a few minutes at night towards God, toward meditating on him. You know, when I sit down to meditate, I feel such a thrill. Such a thrill. And I feel that this is such a sacred opportunity. It is time for God and I just to be together, just to be one. And I slow my breath, I begin to focus on the ajna, and I enter into that supreme state, nirguna aspect of God, which is beyond all creation, and entering into that static stillness of supreme peace, equanimity, everything that my soul has yearned for, everything that my heart has wanted, is satisfied in that communion. And then as I enter back into this world and open these two eyes, I don't come with a neediness as to what this world can provide for me. Rather, I think, how can God express himself through this form in a way that delights him? And so I come with an abundance to give rather than out of a poverty of need to get. This is a tremendous concept to begin to understand about ourselves, that when we come into this world just needing everything to make us happy, to make us fulfilled, we are going to be disappointed. But when we get that need fulfilled deep within our own mind, body, and soul through our communion with the inmost Lord, then we come into this world with what we have to give. When you think about those people who enter into a workplace and they're just there to get what they can get, they're not interested in serving. They're just simply trying to get whatever they can monetarily or ego-wise out of the situation. They're unpleasant to work around. They're greedy. They're graspy. In contrast, somebody who is truly there to serve, what can I do for you? How can I help this company or this organization fulfill its mission? And they're thinking that way, and their creative sources go in that way. And they feel joy, they feel happiness, they feel peace, because they're exactly where God placed them. You know, when some devotees asked Swami Trelyanga, the great Swami, who lived in Benares at the same time as Lari Mahasaya, I say at the same time, he lived many years longer. It's said that he lived 300 years. And that people thought so highly of him, he would be sitting down by the banks of the Ganges and meditating, and sometimes he'd be sitting out on the water on the Ganges with no visible support for his 300 pounds. He had a very large body, even though he ate hardly anything at all. And so Master said, if Jesus Christ were to walk down through the streets of New York City with everybody knowing who he is, that Trelyanga stirred that kind of excitement when he walked down the road. People were just in awe of this great master. And yet this great master gave such great respect to Lari Mahasaya. Now in India, swamis are held out to be much higher than householders and people who apparently are making a living and living in a home and all of that. And Lari Mahasaya came to help break down those kinds of barriers and assumptions. And so they asked the great master, Swami, why do you give such respect to Larhi Mahasaya? And he said, he's like a little kitten that wherever God places him, he surrenders to it completely. That Larhi Mahasaya did not need to shed his clothes or move away from his home or quit his job in order to have that divine communion. That he found it exactly where he was. And he expressed it through all the different modes. He was a husband. He was a father. Eventually became grandfather. He owned a home. He worked in a business. I think he was an accountant within that business. And he fulfilled all of those functions. And so he came to bring new hope to mankind, that you didn't have to leave your home. You didn't have to go to some cave. If you can't meditate in the comfort of your own home, you're kidding yourself if you think a cave is going to provide you a better environment. Now, I understand why yogis go into these more remote areas, because as you attune yourself to that inmost spirit within you, you become more sensitive. Your psychic nature awakens, and you're more aware of what other people are thinking and saying. You're more aware of the restless nature that most people carry around in this world. And many times it can be painful, and it can disturb your concentration upon God as you're making your way up in this journey. And when you get into a cave and you feel that solid granite all around you, it acts like an insulation against the vibrations of the earth. So it makes sense in that way. They're not denying themselves this world. They're not denying themselves anything. But when they're naturally drawn into those caves, they're looking for that insulative value. Because then their nervous system relaxes. And they're able to focus their attention more easily and go into the higher realms of spirit. So this is why yogis will retire from life in that sense. But Larhi Mahasaya proved through his own life and his own experiences that you didn't have to retire from life in that way. Now, it presents challenges, but so does going to a cave. There is Babaji's cave. It's said to be the cave where Larhi Mahasaya was initiated by Babaji. That cave is wet on the bottom. If you go up there, a guide takes you up and shows you, and he brings some rubber foam mats, because when you sit down, otherwise it would be wet in there. And it's rather cool, and that's why they light a fire to help dry it out and then to be able to bring warmth to the cave. But it's not an easy existence. And then you have to go out and you have to beg your food. And it's just whatever any of the hill people have available for you that particular day. And maybe there's nothing. And so you go back to your cave and you've got an empty stomach. And so it's not an easy existence. We shouldn't over-romanticize it. But when you can go within your own room, within your own meditation chair, on your own asan blanket, and you sit and you still the breath and you draw it in, and all of your life energy begins to flow up your spine, you go beyond these two thieves of good and evil. You merge and enter into that supreme consciousness. And so we continue here with Mother's writing. And our minds are constantly focused upon the sins we have committed. As we are constrained by Orthodox churches to do, how then can we place our full attention upon God? That's a really good question. If you're constantly thinking, I'm a sinner, and I've fallen from grace, and so on, whatever you fill your mind with, that you become. So it makes sense, doesn't it, to put your whole attention upon the goodness in your own nature. We must learn that discrimination. The word repent means merely to creep back. It means that having sinned or gone away from God, we must creep back to our former status of oneness with Him. The word Jesus means Savior, and the word Christ means the Anointed One. And then Mother quotes from 2 John verse 7, "For many deceivers are entered into the world, who confess not that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh. This is a deceiver and an antichrist." How greatly this is misunderstood. The whole Christian world has come to think of the Christ as having been confined in only one little body. They are the deceivers and the antichrist. Isn't that an amazing statement? They are the deceivers and the antichrist, those who teach that He only came in one body. Because Jesus, the mystic Christ, is within every man. Now, this knowledge has not yet dawned on humankind in general. People are still struggling with this. Either they deny it totally, in the sense that they don't believe in a God, or they don't believe in Jesus Christ, or so on. And so they deny it totally, or there is the Christian element, more Orthodox, traditional folks, who just think He came in one form 2,000 years ago, and through that one form, all mankind is saved. Now, what is it to be saved? You would think that if you were truly saved, that if you went down to the altar, you gave yourself to Jesus Christ, accepted Him as Lord and Savior, the whole formula, wouldn't you be free of sin? Would you not be free from those things that bother you? Those things that take you away from God. But we see that it's not so. You can go through a period of a honeymoon phase when you go through a kind of euphoria. But eventually that begins to dissipate. Just as such a individual who falls in love with somebody. And that lasts for a little while perhaps. And then it just gradually begins to fade away. And suddenly you wake up and you realize you have a real human being, not your rose-colored glass version of that person. And then the real work begins. And similarly, when you go through a transformational experience of going down to the altar, accepting Jesus, going down to the river, getting baptized, and you feel renewed and reborn, that lasts for a little while. That's wonderful. It's wonderful. It's an initiatory experience, and it's absolutely essential along the way. However, eventually your mind begins to gravitate back to the things of the world once again. It just happens because it's something that you've built into your own experience and your own consciousness. So then you have to get down to work. And that's when in marriages sometimes people say, well, maybe I just married the wrong person because this is too much work. I don't like this. And rather than getting down to business and doing their own work, they just want to shuffle off the person. And people leave the path oftentimes because they have that wonderful honeymoon experience. Everything's going along swimmingly well. And then they get tested. Something comes along and it tempts them away, or they begin to doubt and they don't do their work. They're not willing to do the work, and so gradually the currents of this world begin to sweep that individual back into the world once again. Because they're not swimming strong enough to go against that current. We must be very determined, we must be very strong in our path in order to achieve the highest goal. If you're climbing up a steep hill or a mountain, and you get to the point where you're completely exhausted in your own right, and you sit down to rest for a little bit, and you start to think, it would be a lot easier to go back down this mountain than to keep going up. I just feel worn out here. And sure enough, if you start going back down that mountain, it feels a lot easier. A lot easier. And then that's just confirmation. Well, I was right. It's a lot easier going downhill than uphill. But in life, in your spiritual path, as you let yourself descend and go down into a deep, dark ravine, you realize then you're very, very miserable and you're further away from God than ever. And finally comes the realization, I've got to change something here because this is unbearable. Particularly when you have any lingering memories of what it was like when you were higher up on the mountain. And so then you have to recover all that ground that you lost and get back to that same precipice and then make that decision to keep climbing, keep going. And then maybe you get up to another place and you feel like going down, you feel like coasting a bit. But you know, in this life, we're constantly creating, constantly creating. Whatever you're filling your mind with, that you shall become. And so if you begin to contemplate, just taking a rest, just taking it easy, giving in to the ego, giving in to the body a little bit, not keeping your practice going, what are you filling your mind with? You're filling it with the ego nature, and that you shall become. So to transform this consciousness, transform this mind is no easy task. And we must be in it for the long run. We must be long distance runners, not sprinters only. Back to Mother here. They are deceivers in the Antichrist because Jesus, the mystic Christ, is within every man. He has come in the flesh, the temple of the living God. You see, the flesh is the temple of the living God. Did he not say, Lo, I am with you always? Did he not also say, God and the kingdom of heaven are to be found only within? If this is true, then also he, the Son of God, can be found only within. And Mother continues by quoting from Matthew. And Jesus said to his disciples, If any man will come after him, let him deny himself and take up the cross and follow me. For whosoever shall save his life shall lose it. And whosoever shall lose his life for my sake shall find it. For what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? And what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? This is something perhaps we should put up on the walls around us. What shall a man give in exchange for his soul? And what does this mean in practice every day? What we fill our mind with is what we exchange for our own soul if we're not filling it with God. And this doesn't mean that life has to be a hardship in that sense. We don't have to wear sackcloth and ashes. We don't have to wear a hair undershirt to make ourselves uncomfortable, to try to remind ourselves not to get attached to this body. The easier path is to put our mind on God, not on this body. If you torture this body, your mind is going to be thinking and consumed with the pain of this body. How much better is it to sing God's name? To meditate upon God. That when you work, you feel that you're in service to God and that service is joy-filled. And whatever work God has given you in this world, that is perfect for you. And whether that is a vocation where you're earning money, whether it's raising children, it's whatever you do, that is your service to this world. And as long as you feel that that's God expressing himself through you, uplifting both you and this world, then that is your service. Now, if we don't have that, then what do we have? Really, it's impossible for me to conceive such a life as many people do and delight in that retirement, for instance, might be all about perfecting your golf score. And I just think, my gosh, really? That's it? Or just enjoying yourself in that sense. Because if you're absent of God, I just don't see the point. I don't see the purpose of any of it. So to feel that whatever stage you're in life, God has placed you perfectly. And it's not like you can do it later. You think, well, I'm awfully busy now. I'll wait until later. I love the quote from Gandhi, where he said, I have such a busy day today, I had to meditate twice as long. Who thinks like that? Gandhiji did. Most of us would be going, oh, I better cut short today. I got to get going. Look at how many things I have to do today. Anchor yourself first in God. Chant his name. Sing to him. Love him. Make your life a total dedication to being an expression of his divine will. You will not, I guarantee you, miss out on anything. The ego will tell you, oh, what are you going to miss in this world? You won't miss a thing. You won't miss a thing because you will have God. And God is connected to the entirety of creation. And therefore you have everything. You have everything. You know, they talk about seventh heaven. You hear that as a phrase, seventh heaven. And when I was sitting here and we were singing and chanting God's name beforehand, it's really true, you know. You feel your life energy going to the very top of the head. I believe it's called the fontanella, where the baby has a soft spot there and gradually it grows over. But it's in that very spot where the brain becomes activated. You can sense it. It happens perhaps on the physical. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see whether it registers on any physical instruments or not. Perhaps it would and not. Doesn't make any difference. Because you know the reality of it when you get into it. And then your consciousness rises up above your own body. It's not as if you have to go outside of your body. Because your body is a part of God too. But you sense your consciousness expanding out and embracing all space. It goes beyond this body in that sense. Words are difficult because the experience itself goes beyond words. But then you go merge into all space beyond your own body. And you know that that Supreme Spirit of God is your reality. This body can come and go. But this body is a very, very tiny expression of who you are. It's really true. It's really true. And how many bodies have we worn down through the ages? They're like a garment that we put on for a while. And when it's worn out, we discard it. And we think no more about that body than we would about a discarded garment. We may have gratitude and love. Oh, I just love that outfit. It looked so nice for a while, and then it started getting a little shabby. And as it got more shabby, and it didn't keep the rain out very well, and it didn't serve a purpose much. So I discarded that garment. And then I wore a garment of light for a while. And then I got another garment of flesh for a while. It says that God clothed Adam and Eve in skins, in animal skins. Well, these are the animal skins. It's this physical flesh that's been formed over this body, and we entered into this dual consciousness. I wanted to read to you today from Kabir. Farther and farther from zero. Suddenly I fall from the pavilion into a place where I see the ugliness, hypocrisy, rouge on a sunken face, a thorn lodged in a kidney. The blind crone holds a laurel wreath for the winner, her black ribbons in shreds, her dark eyes with purple, a gold anklet on her shriveled leg. Quite a picture, isn't it? The puppet show looks charming, but go behind the scenes and watch who runs it. Wash your hands and face of this charade. Anyone who wants these prizes flares up quickly like wood chip. There is one who can help, who turns the wheel from non-existence to a sweet-breathing apneness. Words are ways we add up breath. counting stress and syllable with our exacting musical knack that takes us farther and farther from zero. So I implore you to fall in love with God, to get a divine romance going in your life. And you know, we don't have to really work and discipline ourselves when that romance is in full activity. We're drawn, we feel drawn. More powerful than the magnet of this world, God draws him to himself, draws us to himself. And so to feel that God is drawing you, pulling you, leading you back to himself, and that you are a willing file, you might say, that's being pulled towards the magnet. You are that little metal, piece of metal that is just inextricably being drawn in by the power of that magnet of God. And to love it, to feel it. You know, so oftentimes in our spiritual path, we're very aware of what we're not, of how we fall short of the goal. But you see, if we fill our minds with that, we become more of that, inadvertently. And so if you put those things aside, you say, yes, that is true, but God is inside of me and more powerful than whatever that is, because I've never given up on God, no matter how far I've wandered away. And then you begin to think, that's God thinking that thought through me, even if it seems like an ungodly kind of a thought. And the wonderful thing about that practice is, the moment you connect it to God, oh, that's God thinking that thought through me. If it's something that God doesn't want to think through you, it loses its power in you. And your mind immediately connects to God. Try it. Even unlovely thoughts, but do it with everything. Good thoughts, bad thoughts, ugly thoughts, everything. It will help to purify your mind because it connects you directly to God. Always thinking, this is what he's thinking through me. This is what he's speaking through me. This is what he's doing through me. And in your mind, by constantly making that reference back to God, you short circuit past the ego. It's got no foothold there. And then you just feel that it's God who's thinking, feeling, speaking, doing everything through you, which is the truth in the beginning. And as your mind becomes more and more purified, you know it as the truth, that it is God who's doing everything through you. Larhi Mahasya came to show us the way. Mother Hamilton came to show us the way. Paramahansa Yogananda came to show us a way. Let us not discard those things. You know, Swami Satchidananda told me that people get the Vision magazine. I've been reading to you from the one that we just recently received. He said people would go to the back of the Vision magazine. They'd read the ashram news, whatever was new and juicy, you know, and then they'd put it down and they'd not pick it back up again. Or they would go to people's homes and they were all sitting there in the folders that they had come in the mail and they'd never even been opened up. And what is it inside of us that is so inspired in the beginning, but gradually it begins to erode? And we lose that edge, we lose that magnetic draw towards God. Suddenly the words don't inspire us in the way that they once did. I remember a young Indian man when I was at the ashram in 1998, and he came to me and he says, oh, I understand that you teach yoga. And I could tell by the way that he said it, he was thinking of hatha yoga. And I said, well, I teach bhakti and karma and yani yoga, you know, as Papa did. Oh, okay. And he turned around and walked away, disappointed. If there's something inside of us that begins to push the goodness away, to begin to push God away. And we must be on guard with that. because it creeps in there, and if we begin to fill our mind with it, that too we become. And that is why it is said by Jesus that many are called, but few are chosen. And I rephrase that, and I say many are called, but few choose. Because every day is a choosing. We have to continue to choose. So to cultivate and create that divine romance, because that's the easiest way to go to God, is to fall in love with Him and then just do everything for Him. And let that uplift you, inspire you, transform you, until there is nothing but He pervading you, inspiring you, taking you all the way to Himself. Now, if you please pray with me. Oh, Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. Amen. Pronouns. I bow to the light within you.